This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. A tragic event in the life of ISU volleyball coach Melissa Myers rocked her world and caused her to quit last month.
So I gave a lot of family time up over the course of my life for sports, for athletics. And I feel guilt when something like this happens because, you know, like my family went on vacation a summer ago and I didn't go because I had a camp.
Gaining hard-won perspective and doing things for the right reasons. Hear more from Brian Bloodworth's interview with Melissa Myers. Plus, a walkthrough of a long-dormant hotel in the Twin Cities now restored to life after a troubled history of redevelopment. And making a movie in McLean County. All that and a GLT News update on the way. This is Sound Ideas on GLT.
Support for the Sound Ideas podcast comes from listener contributions to GLT, with additional support from Country Financial Representative Justin M. Boyd. Information at justinmboyd.com. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Last week, when lawmakers finally passed a state budget, their counterparts in local government cheered. A day or two later, mayors and city managers across the state got the bad news that the hard-fought budget package included a sales tax surprise that will further strain municipalities. GLT's Ryan Dunham has more on what this will mean for local taxpayers.
Sales taxes are a big deal for the town of Normal and city of Bloomington. It's their largest sources of tax revenue, and that money pays for basically all the important stuff. Police and fire, street maintenance, snow removal. But that giant pot of money is about to get a whole lot smaller. As part of the comprehensive budget package passed in Springfield, the state is now charging cities a new fee to collect and send back those sales tax dollars. It's a 2% fee, but it adds up. The new fee will cost the city of Bloomington more than $700,000, and the town of Normal around $500,000. Normal City Manager Mark Peterson.
From the state's perspective, I think it's, I guess you could call it a money grab. They need the money, and this was a way to collect money. I understand the state's dire financial situation, and, you know, if this helps, I hope it helps. Let me put it that way.
The Illinois Municipal League represents cities and towns in Springfield, and it's lobbied against this change in the past. But they didn't get the chance this time around because the measure was added to the budget package at the 11th hour. Illinois Municipal League Executive Director Brad Cole says they're strongly opposed to the new fee for sales tax processed by the Department of Revenue, but their hands are tied.
I don't think this was something that the department pushed, although I'm sure they're very happy about it. But I think this was something that came out of the governor's Office of Management and Budget. They've talked about this in the past sporadically, but there was this seemed to be kind of a late addition into the process as a way for the state to grab more money from local governments, basically.
The governor's office did not immediately return a request for comment. The state is able to siphon off this money because of how it's collected. Normal's Mark Peterson explains.
So all sales tax collections in Illinois, whether it's the state sales tax, of which local governments get a part of that, or if it's a home rule sales tax, which is really all sales tax to a local government, is paid into the state of Illinois, and then they disperse that money to local governments. There has never been a fee for that before, and they've elected to charge a fee. In my mind, it's a substantial fee.
Bloomington's finance director, Patty Lynn Silva, explains where that money goes.
The home rule sales tax, right now the city has shared in giving that to the county for their jail expansion and mental health. There's a portion of it that goes directly into our street resurfacing program. And then the rest of it has traditionally gone to general operations. General operations, most services the city provides are in our general fund. Public safety being over 50% of our general fund. So a lot of those funds go to help fund public safety.
Normal's Peterson says it'll cost municipalities statewide $60 million a year. Peoria is projecting a loss of $1 million every year. Peterson says the lost revenue will have a significant impact on his town. Put another way, normal taxpayers are losing out on $2.5 million every 5 years.
It's a significant amount of money to lose, and that's and we'll have to figure out a way to account for that loss of revenue through spending cuts.
And while lawmakers took their time passing a budget, this new fee is not so patient. It's retroactive to July 1st, meaning cities and towns have to deal with this now.
The worst part about it, not the worst part, the whole thing's bad, but a bad piece of it is that it starts now, so it impacts budgets that are in place currently. So that's a 2% hit in revenue for communities that they're going to have to adjust to now. It's not like they can plan for this next year.
Officials say this move will force tough decisions in communities around Illinois, already dealing with uncertain sales tax revenues and a reluctance to go near the always controversial topic of property tax increases. Bloomington's finance director says online shopping is cutting into sales taxes, too.
So as the internet sales continue to grow, cities will earn less and less. So unless, you know, the price of commodities or, you know, gasoline or, you know, other things rises, we anticipate that those revenues will be flat over the next 5 years.
Bloomington and Normal last raised their local sales tax in January 2016. Normal was already facing an austerity budget even before this fee, thanks to flat sales tax and loss of Metro Zone money from Bloomington. Both cities also face rising pension obligations. For now, city leaders are on the back end of a good news, bad news deal with the state. Here's Normal's Mark Peterson.
It was kind of a bittersweet moment. We're happy there's a state budget. We're very disappointed that it has this impact on local governments, but we're not alone. I mean, we can't, you know, Illinois State University is facing cuts, and public schools are facing cuts, and human resource agencies are facing cuts. This is, I guess, a form of a cut to municipalities in that the state is charging this fee, a rather exorbitant fee, for collecting our sales tax. I guess, you know, we're just, maybe we're doing our part to try to help the state with its budget woes, but it still is going to force local governments, not just here, but throughout the state, to make some hard choices.
I'm Ryan Denham.
For a closer look at sales tax trends in Bloomington Normal, check out interactive graphics with this story on our website, WGLT.org.
Support for GLT comes from Jack Batal Real Estate Group and Keller Williams. Jack and his team are committed to helping Bloomington Normal continue to thrive by giving back to GLT and other local nonprofits. Current listings at jacksguarantee.com. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Still to come, a movie among the cornfields. After almost a decade of dormancy, there's new life on the North Normal Hotel landscape. Laura Kennedy has a look around the brand new Radisson.
Building upon the skeleton of previous hotels that once occupied the site, the Radisson is aiming to succeed where Holiday Inn and other chains failed. While there's still some work to be done, like hanging a few light fixtures and finishing the pool, the Radisson is open for business at 8 Trader Circle. After the $18 million reno, the opening was soft, says sales manager Kenzie Annett. And director of sales Mallory Browning says a splashier debut is in the wings.
In August, we have our grand opening on August 10th.
We're having a lot of people from ISU, the mayor, so forth, just people that have an influence in this town. We just want everybody to come and see our space and see what we can offer and just welcome everybody. And hopefully it'll be a nice new beginning for the hotel and for this side of town.
Well, on this spot, two other hotels existed over the years. So is this current hotel that we're standing in now, is this the same structure, or did they level that hotel, and did you guys build from scratch? How did that go?
We kept the bones. We kept the same structure of the old building, which we love because we like that we didn't have to tear something down and make something brand new, but kind of, you know, rebirthed or, you know, regenerated this area and this whole building here. So we took it down to the bones and built up from there. So everything you see is brand new in here.
So let's go look around for a bit, shall we? Give me a little bit of a walkthrough here.
Absolutely. So we're in the atrium now. You see we have a lot of soft seating area, business center, and then our bar is kind of our centerpiece of the lobby here. And then the restaurant is on the other side that you see.
So why did you decide to make the bar the centerpiece of the atrium?
We just wanted everybody to be a place where people hang out, to be, you know, whether you're a part of the community and you're coming in for, you know, dinner or you're a guest here, you know, we like this common area to be something that people can sit and enjoy and relax their time rather than kind of being rushed around or anything like that.
So what is the name of the restaurant?
It's called Trader's Grill, so they're open for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. And we do have an amazing chef that just came and joined our team, so we have a lot of new and different items that he's bringing on board.
So it's natural for a hotel to have a restaurant because you need to feed your guests, obviously.
Right.
But there has been more of a trend in recent years where hotels put in restaurants that are going to be bringing in community members, not mm-hmm. just guests as well.
Correct.
And Tony Roma's, of course, has been a big success mm-hmm. over at Jumer's. Mm-hmm. So how do you make a hotel restaurant appealing to the community so that people will come into North mm-hmm. Normal to dine?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think consistency is key. You know, people come in, they know what to expect, and the experience of it all. Going into a typical restaurant, you can kind of feel rushed sometimes. You know, the tables have to be flipped for the next seat. But here we're hoping that, you know, if you're done with your dinner, you can flow into the soft seating area. You can come and relax and enjoy or watch the game on the big TVs around the bar. You know, a little bit more informal, something that they can enjoy.
So where do we go beyond the lobby?
Yeah, let's go to our conference center.
Okay, and that's over here to the left.
That's right.
And we see still a few finishing touches going on here.
Yep. This is one of our spaces. We call this Hickory Grove. It's our second largest meeting room, about 3,100 square feet. So right here you see it's set for rounds. The function of the room is very versatile and flexible. So our space is a little different than other conference centers in that we don't have one large ballroom with air walls in between. We have four completely separate rooms.
Why was that chosen to be like that?
I think it gives the customer or the client a little bit more of a special feeling. You know, again, you have four complete walls. Not one of them isn't a different look to the others and things like that.
There's no accordion curtain or anything like that.
Yeah.
That gets pulled across.
Yeah, exactly. And so it kind of just, I think it really separates the client, makes them feel like this is their space and it's not shared or anything like that. I think noise control is going to be something that we will never have to deal with sharing walls and having that sort of a thing. And they get their own space and feel comfortable in it.
Well, on this spot for over the years, going back probably 30 years or more, there were two other hotels that were in this location, both of which sadly failed.
Mm-hmm.
What is your plan to avoid that fate?
Mm-hmm.
Is this
yeah.
third time's the yeah. charm, or
well,
is...
Well, I don't think it's the location that was the issue. I just think that at some point people kind of lose sight of what's important, and I don't think that that's going to be the case for us. We care about our customer, we care about our client, our staff, you know, we want to be a part of the community, and so we just think that care, that extra time, and our management team is amazing, Swift Hospitality, so I think that we're going to be able to, you know, be the one that lasts.
So when you say you want to be a part of the community outside mm-hmm. the walls of Radisson, how do you do that?
We've already had some really good local sponsorships and things like that with some, you know, people in the community. We are giving as much as we can. We're making it really fair for nonprofits to come in here. We have some, you know, good bookings on that as well. You know, just trying to make sure that we're out there. We're showing them that we don't want to just take business and, you know, count our dollars. We're here to really be a part and an influence, a good influence on this side of the town particularly.
And I think one good one that we do have a great connection with is Home Sweet Home Ministry. Mm-hmm. Just with opening up our doors and just doing a soft opening of trying to get our kitchen and everything going, we donate a lot of our extra food off to them just to make sure nothing goes to waste, and that's what we're going to keep on doing.
Yeah. So let's continue on and take a look through some more.
Absolutely. So one thing I also like is all of our great big windows.
Yeah,
you know,
we have a great southern view here.
Yes, that's right. Over here, we have a couple breakout rooms.
Breakout rooms?
Mm-hmm. They're smaller rooms. Something, if you have a big meeting in particular, these are the little ones that you can kind of have.
Sort of like a subcommittee room.
Exactly, yeah. So this is set up boardroom style. A little bit different is we decided to put big TVs in here instead of, you know, big screens and things like that. We think that it'll just function a little bit better for the kind of group that will come in. and then to this room.
I noticed the flagrant use of the color gray here. Gray is hot right now.
We have a neutral palette here, you know, some grays, some blues, things like that. So we think that that'll kind of offer up it's a good modern look, and it also is neutral enough to where groups can kind of theme it out to whatever colors or anything they want to do with it.
Back when we did have other hotels here, and then sadly they had gone under, things have changed a lot in Bloomington Normal, particularly in Normal, in Uptown Normal.
Yes.
We now have two new hotels in Uptown Normal. How do you see yourself fitting in with that particular landscape here on the north side?
Well, I think that we have a different style, a different approach than the hotels in Uptown Normal. They're beautiful and well-run hotels, but you know, as in terms of flexibility and in terms of kind of what we can offer groups, I think we are able to kind of, I don't want to say middle of the road, but we're able to just accommodate different things because we don't have quite the high dollar room rate and things like that that those particular hotels have. And you know, they've got great location and things like that around the shopping and stuff like that, so it's very well justified, but we're a little bit off the beaten path over there, so we think that we can have more flexibility with that.
And of course, you are also right off the interstate, and that gives you an advantage that they don't, presumably.
Yeah, we're very easy to find. We're right off the interstate. You can see our great big building when you're driving on the interstate. So we hope that that'll kind of be a little bit of a drive, a focus that people can, you know, see the big Radisson and know that they can have a comfortable stay with us.
Okay, let's take a look around a little bit more.
Yep, we have another room here. This is Cottonwood, a little smaller than Evergreen that you just saw. It's an empty room right now. This one is 480 square feet, but again, another room for a small conference table kind of a thing.
How do you come up with these names like Cottonwood and Hazel and all that kind of stuff?
It's kind of an interesting story. So one of the advantages of opening a hotel is you kind of get to put your own fingerprint on it, and I've been here developing the sales part, this part of the company for a while now, and we just got tasked one day with naming the rooms, and so we kind of try to figure out a theme that we wanted to go with and things like that. So we came up with trees that are indigenous to Illinois. So there are kind of some tree decorations and things like that throughout the hotel that you'll see. So it kind of just weaves together and ties in that way.
And you've taken the very strong stance of not having everything branded Lincoln as well.
Correct.
Because I mean, there's a lot of Lincoln around here.
We didn't want to exclude anybody. You know, we're here to, you know, play nice. And so you know, we like that we didn't go such a hard theme that maybe has already been used and maybe might exclude some other groups or things like that. So trees everybody likes. You know, we're good.
What about people who want to stay fit? I mean, you're awfully close to Constitution Trail here.
Yes.
Are you promoting anything with regards to people using the trail?
We are. We have an app called iConcierge, and it draws more people in. But one of the things on there is we mapped out some runs for some of our guests. So if they wanted to come in, there's three different runs for them, differing distances, and they just click on which one they want to go to. We mapped it out so that they could just follow the trail, and it could take them to wherever they want to go and back for their nice little jog.
What are your tourism plans? Do you aim at a particular angle of tourism, say sports tourism? You're very close to the Corn Crib.
Mm-hmm.
You're also very close to campus. You've got Hancock right down the road, Hancock Stadium. Are you going to be marketing yourselves towards sports enthusiasts or maybe just toward university alums who will be coming back? Do you have a particular marketing plan when it comes to tourism here in the Twin Cities?
We've reached out to a lot of those places. Corn Crib, we already have a great relationship with them over there. They're our neighbors, so they're one of our first clients we had and relationships we started to make. And we have some advertising and things like that over there, as well as kind of working with Redbird Arena and kind of getting that kind of thing underway. So far, our main groups have been sports teams. There's a lot of tournaments and things like that going on over the weekends here, and so you know, those were our first guests, and you know, we made sure they knew it. Like, we were very excited to have them. So sports have been the things that have been kind of our first taste of opening and having guests come in.
Well, there is a lot of buzz on social media. On Facebook, Bloomington Normal Restaurant Scene is talking about your restaurant. How important is social media in your marketing plan here?
We try to get on social media as much as we can, and I think that a lot of people, they get the news from the community on social media. So we're trying to make sure that we reach out to those platforms and that, you know, we're kind of connecting with people that way, that, you know, on their lunch break they're sitting and scrolling on Facebook, and, you know, hopefully they see us and want to have dinner with us. We kind of documented our construction on Facebook and showing, you know, little things of here was it when it's bare bones and stuff like that, and we're going to be rolling out some nice new pictures of you know, the finished product, if you will. So the community's been great. We think that it'll just get better from here.
That's Mallory Browning and Kenzie Annett from the brand new Radisson Hotel in North Normal. One of the partnerships that they say they're forming within the community happens to be with White Oak Brewery. They're planning to have their brews on tap in the Radisson Bar. I'm Laura Kennedy.
The Radisson has 12,000 square feet and 158 rooms. You can see a gallery of photos from inside the new Radisson on our website, WGLT.org.
GLT comes from Country Financial Representative Justin M. Boyd, helping investors plan for the future and stay on track for retirement and college savings based on their unique situations and goals. Details at justinmboyd.com. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
Still to come on Sound Ideas, a talk with former Illinois State University volleyball coach Melissa Myers. A one-time pastor from a church in Towanda felt called to a new mission a decade ago. He left the flickering lights of liturgical candles for the bright glimmer of Hollywood. Now, Kevin Mounts is returning to Central Illinois for his first attempt at making a feature-length film. GLT correspondent Colleen Reynolds reports that Mounts is launching the production on A Wing and a Prayer.
And cut. Excellent. Good job, guys. One thing...
As a pastor, Kevin Mount says he'd love to write sermons. That eventually led to more writing, a movie in fact. But he was no Ari Gold from Entourage, and his pitches from Central Illinois went unanswered. So even as his small kids were halfway through the school year, Pastor Mounts simply became Kevin. He packed up and moved to L.A., formed a production company called No Man's Land, and found like-minded people who wanted to make movies. For now, production amounts to short videos featuring a character called Robert Mann, offering manly advice.
He's the man.
Robert Mann here with your Man's Man tip of the week. Today, I will be answering a letter from a fan who refers to himself as Sincerely Stefan.
To pay the bills, Kevin clocks in as a human resources manager at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in L.A. No Man's Land is where he goes nights and weekends. With failed attempts at landing financial backing and trying to create his movie The Hollywood Way, a year ago, Kevin took another path, inspired by a book from independent filmmaker and actor Ed Burns, and another called Naked Filmmaking.
So I had a script called Little Vagabond that I had written when I was back here to be filmed for here. And I thought, well, why don't I just do that? You know, I'm not getting any traction out there. So I mentioned that to my mom, my mom's super supportive. And she said, well, if you want to do that, then I'll get you the equipment.
For the past year, Kevin taught himself filmmaking 101. He's using an iPhone 6S with add-ons, lights, and sound.
Snakes.
And he's perfecting editing techniques he began learning for No Man's Land.
There's going to be countless mistakes on this film, countless. If perfection is the standard, like, then I would never do anything. I'm going to learn as I go. I don't have $100,000 to spend on film school.
The Little Vagabond, the name of his movie, is based on a William Blake poem in which a child laments the church would be more fun and more people would go if it was more like a bar. The movie blurb is, small town pastor finds more Christ-like behavior in a bar than in his own congregation and starts a church there. Kevin says it's an idea investors couldn't get behind.
You either had people that really wanted to take it sort of the Christian sense and have like more of a Fireproof or those type of movies, or they wanted to make it more secular. And I wanted to have something that sort of straddles the line between the two, because I think that's where a lot of people are at. People are looking, they're searching for something, but they don't have all the answers.
It's a one-in-a-lifetime experience. It's just been amazing.
That's 14-year-old Austin Feman, who acted in one play before he was cast as Nick, the son of a pastor who's fired when he takes a job in a bar to pay off a debt. Austin, like many others involved in the film, is volunteering his time. He says he's learning a lot about the business of making movies, including how all-consuming it is.
For a while, I had track. That it was kind of hard to get both those things in, but we got it to work.
With her son cast on a production that had no budget and a lot of missing pieces, State Farm business architect Jennifer Feman tapped into her event planning and project management background. She has become a self-appointed volunteer production manager.
It turned into doing some casting and doing some scouting on locations, and now I'm on site helping Kevin with whatever he needs as he's making the magic happen.
Ready? Rolling. What'd she say?
I said quiet.
Okay. Okay. Shut up and shoot the film, man.
It's a very collegial shoot. Kevin's the type of director who gives actors freedom to make choices.
Cut. Good.
C plus.
You want another one?
Yeah, I do.
Cut.
Jennifer says she typically worries a lot, but everything came naturally to her and to the production. Divine intervention?
I think there's definitely a force of nature. I don't know if it's God's hand or not, but I don't know how else we would have all got this together. It really has not been that long since we started doing this, and it's been amazing about how much we've been able to pull together in such a short amount of time.
There certainly has been a lot of, call it serendipity.
Even when I was getting a massage the other day, I was telling my massage therapist about what I was doing, and I kid you not, a couple hours later, I had a text from someone that was interested, and she filled a major role that we were worried about not being able to fill. I mean, it just has all been falling into place.
Helping make it all fall into place is State Farm employee Michelle Anderson, who turned her home over for 2 complete days to let Kevin and the crew shoot.
For me, the only way I got involved was my hairdresser, of all people. Her daughter, I believe, has a part in it, and she happened to mention that, hey, they're looking for a farmhouse, you know, you have any interest? And it's like, you know, I really would have interest. And that stemmed into, they needed another smaller house to do some other takes. I hollered at my neighbor across the highway, and she's like, oh yeah, we're all over that. So
Michelle believes it's more than just chance that has brought all these people together. She writes fiction in her spare time, so she enjoyed watching the rare synergy of this particular creative process. Michelle found herself dragging chairs out of closets and considering accessories to make her home feel as authentic to the look Kevin envisioned.
It was funny, I'd never met Kevin before, so I don't know what kept driving me to want to make it as good as it could be for what he was filming, but there was just, that drive was there. And so it was just, and I felt that from everybody else too.
Actors took vacation time from their day jobs and spent their own time hunting down appropriate wardrobe for various scenes. Local businesses donated food during long days. Port Jesse Cafe hosted an after-hours shoot, and Six Strings will double as a bar called The Neon in the movie. General Manager Brian Dixon was immediately all about it, and he's not surprised by the community response.
I think it's really kind of a testament to the spirit of the people of the Heartland that they are always come together for something like this for little to no remuneration. You know, they don't need money. They just kind of want to help out, and they want to be involved, and they want to have a cool community-based thing.
Brian's only acting experience was in a Home Depot training video, but he also plays a role in the movie.
It doesn't really scare me so much, because I think once we, you know, get in there, get on location, you get the spirit of the thing, I think it will become a lot more natural. And plus, I'm not straying too far out of my element. I bartend for a living, and I'm the bartender in the movie, so it's pretty natural.
Your father and I were talking about me coming to see you on Sunday. It's been a while, you know.
You don't want to do that.
Well, of course we do. We were just waiting for the right time.
Dad got fired yesterday. Well, he did.
Is that true, Joseph Lee?
It's time to move on.
Move on to what? Bartending at the Neon?
Maybe. There's good people down there.
Like the drunk that fell on Nicky?
That was an accident.
It doesn't matter. He shouldn't have been there.
But I like it at the Neon.
Of course you do, sweetheart.
And they like me there, too. It's different.
Someone who only had a few lines in the dinner scene could be the next Dakota Fanning. At only 10 years old, Aubrey Blake plays Madison, the one who blurts out in the scene that her dad was fired as pastor. Aubrey has never acted before, but seems like a natural.
You have to act like you're in real life, and you can't put too much pressure on yourself while you're, like, act a little weird.
The kids and everyone involved have bonded. They celebrated double birthdays for Kevin and Austin and held a wrap dinner for the principal actors. Kevin will return in October, the next vacation from his HR job, to shoot more scenes. Jennifer thinks no matter what, the unique bond has created a second family.
We've even talked about doing, you know, additional projects together as a group, and I think it's fun.
Jennifer considers herself spiritual, not religious, but she thinks the message drew her to the movie, and it will do the same for others.
It's about just doing the right thing as a person and being a nice, kind person in the world. And you're going to find that in a bar. You're going to find that on the street. You're going to find that in a church. I think being in the middle is a good place to be. You don't always have to be on one side or the other.
It does sound as if everything magically fell into place. Shooting was easier than Kevin expected, except on the first day.
First day that we were out here, it was raining. I had all my equipment out, and here my mom is out in the rain holding an umbrella over my equipment with no jacket on, no nothing. Her hands are shaking. She's shivering. It's so cold out there.
Has he prayed for movie-making success? Kevin says, you bet. Does he think his prayers are being answered?
That's a really good question. I hope he's happy with this. I hope he's happy with it.
Kevin's confidence grew daily, so much so he's not worrying about what happens when he wraps the movie. He hopes that by talking about something different, a distributor will take interest. If not, he shrugs and says, there's always YouTube. For now, his holy grail is finding a way to finish The Little Vagabond.
And cut. And I cut too soon. Sorry.
I'm Colleen Reynolds.
You can check out a photo gallery from the two-week movie shoot on our website at WGLT.org.
Support for GLT comes from The Music Shop, helping student musicians of all skill levels sound their best by partnering with school band and orchestra programs throughout Central Illinois. Instrument rentals, sales, maintenance, and repair. Details at themusicshop.com. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Still to come, a Chicago-raised blues rocker comes to Central Illinois. Last month, Illinois State volleyball coach Melissa Myers caught a lot of people off guard when she announced she was stepping down after 9 successful seasons. GLT's Brian Bloodworth found out a tragic event in April rocked Myers' world for a second time. It made her step back, put things in perspective, and evaluate her life. Myers says her decision wasn't easy, but addresses her own well-being.
This wasn't a decision that I certainly took lightly. It was something I have been, I've had to think about a lot, but that, you know, there's things that sort of led to the decision, and I can talk about those in a little bit, but I think the thing that was important in terms of the timing was I knew how busy my summer was going to be, and I knew how busy the fall was going to be, and I knew that if I was considering leaving at all, it had to be as soon as possible so that they would have time to hire someone new and let them get settled, and let the team get settled before the season, because I really believe this team is going to be really good. They've got it's a great group of students, a great group of athletes, a great group of people, and I wanted to do the best thing for them. The timing of my situation, which I'll talk about in a sec, it's not out of my control, you know. So, but when it happened, it really made me reflect a little bit and assess my life, where I am, what I'm doing, why I'm doing it, and try and make the best decision for me and for my family and for my partner in life. I have a boyfriend that I've been dating for 12 years, and so we don't live together here. So there were some things like that that really I had to think about, and I had to make the decision fairly quick because the team in the program needed to make sure they were in a good position moving forward, and I couldn't take a month and just make this decision in July. It just was going to be too late. So it became a little bit of a timing issue for me and a decision that was going to be best for me personally.
When did you start thinking about stepping down?
Late in April, at the end of April, my sister and my niece were killed in a car accident. They live in the Dallas area, and there was a young man who was intoxicated and doing some drugs, and we believe he kind of passed out at the wheel, and he hit them head on, just crossed the median, hit them head on, and they died instantly. And this isn't the first time that I've had a death in my family. That I'm one of six. I'm from a big family. My youngest sister, 17 years ago, was killed around the same time. It was early May, the first weekend in May, 17 years ago, died in a car accident. So this is my second sister and now a niece, and you know, my mother's in her 70s, and so this has just been really tough on our family. And we're all spread out. I've got a brother in New Jersey, and my sisters live in the Dallas area. My boyfriend's in Louisiana. My parents are out in Pennsylvania, so I'm the only one here in Illinois, which is great. And this has been a great community and a great university and a great team and program. But when that happened, I sort of felt, God, how do I handle this? I mean, there's, you know, I really gave up a lot over the last 30 years, 20 years of coaching. But, you know, as an athlete, also you give up a lot. I mean, every night and weekend you're practicing and you're doing things. And so I gave a lot of family time up over the course of my life for sports, for athletics. And I feel, you feel guilt when something like this happens because, you know, like my family went on vacation a summer ago and I didn't go because I had a camp, you know, things like that. You know, I've always had those sort of regrets as you get older and you think, you know, what is this life for? And you start having these philosophical conversations with yourself and with the people that are close to you. And you really ask yourself, what are we doing and why are we doing it? And the one thing I learned is you can't take any of this with you when you go. You know, we're all going to die. That's inevitable. And life can be very unpredictable. We just don't know. And when these things happen, they really make you step back and say, are you really living your life the way you want to live it? Are you really doing the things that you want to be doing? And it was just a really tough month for me. And I just knew I had no time really to get through and see my family much over the next couple months. So I had to make a decision that was going to give me a little bit more time, not only to process all of this, but also just to be more accessible and available, especially to my mom, but to my boyfriend as well. And, you know, we've been apart for 5 years, and yeah, we hardly see each other. You know, if I told you how many days we've seen each other in the last 5 years, I think you'd be shocked. How are you making this work? So, that certainly was a factor as well. You know, we've got people in our lives are important.
What was it about Illinois State that attracted you to it?
Just a great university. You know, I met great people, really felt like the university was doing some great things. We had great leadership as well. Dr. Brumman was the president at that time, and was very impressed with him and what he was doing at the university. And the program just had really great resources. I mean, we had full scholarships. At Division II, I had like two scholarships. I had to make pasta salad every night. Well, not every night, but, you know, I would be hosting these club tournaments to fundraise, and I would be making pasta salad late into the night to have concession stands the next day to raise money. So, you know, you're nickel and diming a lot at that level, and you're putting in a lot of time and hours, which is great, but it's just difficult to compete at a high level there. So coming here was an opportunity to really upgrade in terms of time and resources and having a lot more help and assistance and scholarship money to be able to get great, you know, just better players.
As far as the program goes at Illinois State and your career here, any regrets or anything that surprised you?
If I were to look back at my 9 years, obviously, you know, people always say you can't have regrets and you have to live your life and not look back, other than just to learn and reflect. But certainly, I think working in athletics, it's a competitive environment. It's an environment where you need to win, right? Especially at this level, there's an expectation that you're going to be able to be successful. And I certainly, most of my career, whether as an athlete or as a coach, I had success pretty quickly. And I'm very fortunate for that. However, here, it took me several more years. It took probably 4 or 5 years to get my feet under me here, to figure some things out, to recruit. You recruit so far in advance here. Years ahead, we're looking at 19s and 20s and 21s right now, and you recruit so far in advance that it's really difficult to make a quick impact sometimes. So I don't know if I have regrets, because I don't want to have regrets, but I certainly look back and wish that I could have been more successful earlier. But you know, at the end of the day, we have such a great group of young women, and our academics are unbelievable. We average around a 3.5, 3.6 GPA as a team. Our students are very involved on campus and you know, in the community, and they're just such great people. I think they compete hard, and I think we improved throughout my career here, but obviously, you know, I would love to have won a championship every year, but I think we learn also that it's not only about championships, it's not only about wins, it's also about just trying to continue to improve and grow as people and to be great teammates, you know, and be able to build great relationships. And I'm grateful for that. I've had a lot of people reach out to me, alums, friends, family, former players, former coaches, colleagues, and that has been really amazing to see, you know, and that's what's great about athletics too, is there is this large community, and I think that's what I'm grateful for, knowing that I've had these kind of relationships with people, and that's helped me to make this decision, or help this decision to be, I'm at peace with it. You know, I'm totally at peace with it. I think it's really the right time in my life to make a change. And having all these people reach out has only confirmed that for me. You know, I think it's been really good. I think in 2014, we had a great year. We went undefeated. We made some history, did some great things. I wish that could have happened every year, but it's really impossible to have that kind of success sustainably. So I think that sometimes you learn more when you're not winning. And I've learned a lot here in my 9 years. I really have. I've grown a lot. And so I'm truly grateful. I have no regrets, and I'm truly grateful for my time and experience here.
You're listening to Sound Ideas with GLT's Brian Bloodworth and former Illinois State volleyball coach Melissa Meyer.
You mentioned you were a family of six. Were you a pretty close, tight-knit family?
You know, growing up, yeah, I was one of six. My parents are still living, and you know, we've one boy, five girls in the family. So yeah, I mean, I think we were close, but we have all spread out and started our, you know, families. I'm the only one without children. They all have children. So I've got 16 nieces and nephews, and again, they're all over the place as well. So yeah, we try and keep in touch as much as we can, but certainly my schedule has always been one where I miss out on most things. I miss the weddings, I miss the funerals, I miss the things, because I'm always working. You know, I just can't not go to a tournament or not go to practice with my team. So, yeah, but we're close, and I've already have plans with my sister and my brother this summer. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing them a little bit more if I can over the next few years. Again, we just don't know, right? So it's important to do that.
GLT correspondent Brian Bloodworth spoke with former ISU volleyball coach Melissa Myers. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Joel DeSilva is a Chicago-raised blues rocker with a background that includes rockabilly and psychobilly. DeSilva drops in on Pop's Place in Decatur this Sunday, and he'll play Blue Monday at the Alamo in Springfield on Monday. GLT's John Norton caught up with DeSilva on the road via Skype to talk about how working in a bar at a young age fueled his love of blues music.
It's the just-released single from Joel DeSilva. It's called Shake, and Joel joins us via Skype from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. You've got the new single. It's called Shake. Is this part of a new album, a collection of singles that are on the way? How are you viewing this?
It's an album that's coming out in September. The album is called Everywhere From Here, and there's 10 original cuts on the record.
Everywhere From Here, what does that refer to?
Well, I worked really hard on the album. It's some of my strongest work, so I believe that I can go everywhere from here.
Musically?
Musically, creatively.
Geographically?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. Well, let's talk about some of that music. You've been involved in a number of different bands, some rockin' bands, bluesy bands, rockabilly, even some psychobilly bands at one point. What ideally is your sound? Are you thinking you're finding this on the new album?
Blues is my roots, because without the roots, music can bear no fruits.
Correct.
Just like Muddy Waters used to say, and he was the granddaddy of rock and roll, pretty much. To me, it's all blues, but right now I would say that I'm in the blues rock Americana genre. That's where I'm comfortable.
You think people get too wrapped up in labels?
I think so, but it's easier for people to categorize someone when they put them in a genre. To me, it's just good music. If your heart feels it, and your head agrees, and it's toe tapping, you pop that CD into your CD player, and you're on the highway, and it gets you moving, and it makes you feel good. It doesn't matter what type of music it is. To me.
Yeah, and Joel, you might have noticed is maybe, I don't know where the line of demarcation is anymore, maybe 5 years ago, 7 years ago, even up to that time, a lot of folks in the blues world were really getting hung up on what was blues and what wasn't blues. It seems that that's not as apparent anymore. Are you feeling the same thing?
Oh, totally. And I'm also seeing a lot of younger people getting into it. The Blues Foundation has helped out a lot with that stuff. There's blues camps everywhere that I'm seeing. We just did two festivals in Canada where they just love blues out there. Both instances, we've had a younger, I would say younger meaning like in their teens, you know, perform before us or be involved in the festival in some way. So the youth movement is very strong, so much more now than it was before.
Tell you about my girl, she rocks me all night long. She fills me up, throws her love out strong. She's tall and sweet, good till the last drop. My candy girl, one lick and I'll never stop. She knows how to boogie, she boogie real low.
Boogie Real Low, Joel DeSilva, here on GLT Sound Ideas. I'm John Norton, and Joel joins us from Pittsburgh. He lives now in South Florida. He is, we basically grew up in Chicago, right?
That's correct. I was born in Rockford, Illinois. Then we moved to Chicago when my father passed away.
Both your mother and father, well, they toured together. They were a musical team, if I have that right. What kind of music did they play, or what did they tour doing?
Sure. My mom sang, and my father played guitar, and they were traveling musicians in Brazil, kind of like a Brazilian bandolero blues, if that makes any sense.
Sure.
It was just him and her, and they were traveling and playing all areas of South America.
Well, you seem to have gravitated toward the blues, toward rock and roll and rockabilly, as we talked earlier. When did that hit you?
Gosh, probably comes from my brother. He got a job as a bartender at a blues bar. I would tag along just to see what, you know, the music was about, and I got a job there as a bar back. And I would see all these bands come through town, like Junior Wells, Magic Slim, Rod Piazza, Kid Bangham, A.C. Reed. I would pick them up from the airport, go get them to their hotel rooms or go get them barbecue, whatever they wanted. And they would see me playing the guitar in the back, and it would show me all the way they did their things and little advice that they would give. And I don't want to swear, but I had a conversation with A.C. Reed about a club he wanted to open. Magic Slim let me sit in, which was very cool.
Ooh, very cool.
Junior Wells. His stories were amazing. It's just that was just a very fortunate time in my life to learn from them firsthand.
Could you put in a nutshell what you might have learned from them in general?
Pretty much just keep going, even when you don't have anything left in you. I remember Ronnie Earl telling me when I was first starting to, if there's anything free, you take it. You know, meaning food or T-shirts or
sure, because
yeah.
You probably aren't making a whole lot of money playing those clubs, right?
Right. Okay. Yeah. And he said, "Never stop playing, never give up." And I also toured with Grady Champion, and he said, "Play like there's a million people in the audience, even if there is maybe two or one or none, because you never know who's." Soul you touch. You can touch and you never know who can be in that audience. I want you to howl with me. I'd like to hear you moan. I want you to howl with me.
mentioned Junior told you some stories. Is there a story you can tell?
Yeah, probably not one you could air on the radio. But I remember, this is a different artist, but B.B. King. It just goes to show you that what keeps artists going on the road is the fans, and it's you guys, and it's you on the radio that keeps the music going. Because my old band, the Hepcat Boo Daddies, we opened up for him on the road maybe like 4 or 5 times in Florida throughout different concert halls and everything. After every show, it doesn't matter how many people wanted to meet B.B. King. It could be a line out the door, hour, 2 hours. He took his time and talked to everybody and signed whatever they wanted. And he was so nice. So it just goes to show you that, you know, it's you guys that are making the difference to us. At least that's how I feel.
Yeah, how cool. How inspiring is that? That's very cool.
Pretty much.
Joel De Silva, thank you so much for your time. And
Thank you, sir.
Lots of folks looking forward to seeing you at the Alamo in Springfield. And thanks for your time.
Thank you, brother. You have a wonderful day.
Joel De Silva plays Pop's Place in Decatur on Sunday. Monday night, he's the headliner for Blue Monday at the Alamo in Springfield. You hear Sound Ideas each weekday on WGLT Normal and WGLT.org. Our website is also where you can find the full Sound Ideas podcast or individual interviews today from Colleen Reynolds, John Norton, Ryan Denham, and Laura Kennedy. WGLT.org is also where you can find contact information to let us know what you think of this show, or share your thoughts at facebook.com/WGLTFM. I'm Charlie Schlenker. This is GLT on WGLT.org, 89.1 FM, Bloomington Normal's Public Media.